So this morning, I'm going to begin by speaking about a phrase from Dogen, who is considered the founder of Soto Zen and lived in Japan in the 13th century. Without bitterest cold that penetrates to the very bone, how can plum blossoms send forth their fragrance all over the universe? Without bitterest cold that penetrates to the very bone, how can plum blossoms send forth their fragrance all over the universe? So, we've just finished a retreat here. Some people sat for 2 days, some people sat for 5, some for 7. Some just showed up when they felt like it. Which we won't go into. In any kind of intensive meditation period, even if you're just sitting here for 40 minutes, there's a potential for a lot of bitter stuff to come up. What we do in our zazen is we see that hell realm stuff, that hungry ghost realm stuff. We see it come up and we don't indulge it. We just see it. We see the anger and we see what we're angry about, who we're angry at, and we just let it be. You can say let it go, but if you try to let it go, it doesn't go. So much better just to follow the Beatles' advice, right? Whoever, John Lennon's advice. Even if he was stoned, it was pretty good advice. Sometimes when you're stoned, you can still get pretty good advice. So, if it's the anger in the hell realm, if it's the neediness of, I really need something different than this meditation. Maybe I'll try another meditation, that other meditation. Oh, I try that, and then I'm back over here again, because that didn't work. Maybe I should go back to the Catholic Church. Yes, Mother Mary, come to me. Oh, our neediness, because we feel not okay in this world. We feel like this world is not predictable, and that our lives are out of sync so much of the time. Animal world, comfort, food, sex. Human world, trying to figure it out. If I could just figure out how to do this zazen, just figure it out. Just figure out how to make this relationship work. Figuring. That's the human realm. That's cool. But we indulge it. And then where are we? We don't have a life. We're just caught, completely caught in it. Or jealousy in the fighting spirit realm. Jealousy that he's only been sitting for 3 days and look at how he can sit straight. And look how peaceful he looks. And I've been sitting for 33 years. Get this guy out of here. The pride realm. I finally got it. Wow. I finally got it. You didn't finally get it. You got it for a second, but then it's gone. Because who is this you who got it? So, freezing of the indulgence of the realms has not been easy practice. But when Dogen wrote this, I don't think he was really talking specifically about the realms. He actually doesn't talk about the realms, these specific 6 realms, in his work. At least, I don't think he does. What he was talking about was what we call Genjo Kon, the natural con, the natural dilemma that comes from our struggle to to live with a little bit of calmness, with a little bit of joy, with a little bit of mutual satisfaction in our relationships. That natural con, that natural problem, whatever it is that comes up, for Dogen, for him and for his students, and for students as the centuries have passed, have progressed, that hardship, that bitterness is a motivation for sitting. And we bring that right to the cushion with us. And it actually helps us focus. You think, oh, it doesn't help you to focus, but it can. It can help you to focus. And this is certainly true in Dogen's life. So I haven't talked for a while about this, but let's see, this is 2007, almost 2008. So 24 years ago when I was sitting here, I wasn't necessarily sitting in this room when it happened. No, I wasn't. I was at work. I got word that my younger brother had committed suicide, and 10 years younger than me. And I was wiped out. I was wiped out. But I used it to as a focus in my sitting. And I actually increased my sitting. And I was able to increase the focus of my sitting because of the pain I was feeling. That pain really... Hi. Come on in. We're talking about pain. Maybe you don't want to come in. Maybe you should stay out. That's what we're talking about. Come on in. What do you think? The pain that I was feeling brought me right to the cushion. I didn't want to indulge the realms. They come up, but the pain helped me focus. The doubt that I had about what I had done, he's 10 years younger than me. In a way, I was his role model. And what had I done? What hadn't I done when I was sitting in Zazen here and he was suffering? What hadn't I done? So that doubt brought me right to the cushion and helped me be one-pointed. Be one-pointed. Not always. And one-pointed with doubt, but still one-pointed. One-pointed with pain, but still one-pointed. One-pointed with loneliness, because I only had one brother. Still one-pointed. Of course, I could have just indulged the realms. I mean, sitting or facing the wall, you can just indulge it if you want. But then why bother to sit? You might as well just indulge at home. So there's a Zen teacher, I can't remember his name, who talks about who flies helicopters. You know, Zen teachers could do anything, right? He flies helicopters. Let's see, what's his name? I can't remember. America, obviously. And he talks about the experience helicopter pilots have, which they call seeing the elephant. Seeing the elephant. And that's when the weather patterns all of a sudden change. They become so different than anything they've ever seen that their training, all they've learned, is no longer applicable. It's no longer applicable. So they have to either try to land or give themselves totally to the new situation. And if they can give themselves totally to the new situation, they can fly the helicopter. And that's called seeing the elephant. Seeing the elephant. Sounds kind of wise, doesn't it? Sounds like some Zen story. So 400 years after Dogen wrote his, without bitterest cold that penetrates the very bone, how come plum blossoms sent forth their fragrance all over the universe? So you will be able to send off fragrance, only it doesn't come from little you. It comes from something bigger than that. If you just are one-pointed, just are still, just are open with kindness to whatever suffering comes up, to whatever predicament or pain or loneliness comes up. So 400 years after Dogen wrote his poem about loneliness, Basho, I mean about plums, not about loneliness, about plums. Basho wrote poems about plums. Well, you know Basho, the famous haiku poet, the most famous haiku poet in Japan? Basho, who was not himself a Zen monk. He's not a Zen, but he wore the Zen, he wore the monk's robes. But he had never been ordained. But he wore the monk's robes, and he tried to live a life of Zen, and he considered Dogen to be his teacher 400 years later. And in all Basho's writing, he never talks about Zazen. He never talks about Zazen. So we don't even know if he sat in Zazen. But if you read him, you know that he had been gone down, gone deep into something, gone deep into not knowing and just seeing the elephant, seeing something new, something new. There's always something new, always. So he writes one poem. In plum flower scent, pop, the sun appears, mountain path. In plum flower scent, pop, the sun appears, mountain path. So Eiken Roshi calls this concentration, realization, personalization. That's what Eiken Roshi calls it. I don't know. I think Basho would just laugh if he heard Eiken Roshi say that. Eiken Roshi got it all figured out. Zen teachers are always trying to figure out how to help their students. They get caught in human realms all the time. No different. No different. So here we have Basho. Basho was itinerant. He was a wandering poet monk, although he was not a monk. He just wore the robes. He had never been ordained. And he wrote poems, and he wandered, and he tried to places to stay where sometimes he could afford to stay in an inn, sometimes he would sleep under a roof outside in a barn. So he wrote this poem. Probably he needed a lot of walking. He walked every day. His practice really was walking and with bare attention. He did kinhin all the time, walking meditation. Probably a little faster than we do it, though. Because he was traversing Japan. If he traversed Japan the way we do our walking meditation, he probably wouldn't have covered much distance or made much progress. So here he is. We can visualize him. I can visualize him. He's in a lot of fog in mountainous regions of Japan. A lot of fog. And here he is walking one-pointedly. Just one-pointedly. Not trying to be mindful in particular. Just being present. If you try too hard to be one-pointed, you're not one-pointed. Just steeped in his steps, just steeped in the mist and smelling plum blossoms. Everything's plum blossoms. All he smells. So he doesn't think about, compare that with some other flower he ever smelled. There he is. In plum flower scent, pop, the sun appears. And the sun is a big opening. You don't know when a big opening is going to come. Maybe it's just a little opening. Maybe it's just a little bit of sun. But when the sun comes, it covers everything. Covers everything. And then mountain path. Mountain path. So Juan Ramon Jimenez says, I feel that my boat has bumped there at the bottom into something big. And nothing happens. Nothing. Quiet, waves, or has everything happened? And we are already at rest in something new. Already. Are we at rest in something new? Already? Are we? Are we? So, practice in a difficult situation of life, and one point in us, and then opening, just opening, just opening, cracking open, cracking that veneer open, letting it crack itself, not trying to poke at yourself, just letting it crack open, as it's ready, in its own time, and then the sun covers everything. And we are already at rest in something brand new. Brand new. And then mountain path. Then mountain path. Meaning some work to do. some pebbles. Some way of personalizing the feeling of joy, of composure that comes out of this practice of sasa. And the personalization can come anyway. It doesn't have to be something particular. Gute's personalization as a Zen teacher was one-fingered Zen. Your personalization could be making a beautiful piece of furniture. If you are inclined to be a carpenter, that could be your personalization. Just to make it with wonderful care and meticulous appreciation of the wood and its fabric and the way it speaks, what it has to say. Personalization isn't imitating anybody. It just is. It's your own way of expressing your feeling of interdependence and openness. Even if you have a little, just a little experience of that sense of interdependence. You have to have something big. Don't always look for something big. If you look for something big, you won't appreciate that already you're cracking open. Already you're cracking open. Already there's something new. So for me, personalize in different ways, I guess. One is, you're here giving a Dharma talk, telling you about something that I've been doing for a long time that I don't really understand, that I really love, but I don't understand. I don't have a special interest in understanding it, but I love it more and more. I don't know what it is. I don't have any idea, but I love it. And then also in my life for the last 12 years or so, I've had a chance to personalize the pop from my hard practice after my brother's death. You never know different ways you're going to be able to personalize. You just don't know. And sometimes you think there isn't any way. But if you keep sitting, if you keep coming back just to being with what is, with bare attention, you'll be able to personalize. Something will happen. So in the case of my brother's case, for 12 years now, I've been working on trying to create environments here in the Twin Cities. For people who have both some mental illness like depression or something else, and some chemical health issues, some chemical dependency. Because one of the reasons my brother died is that for years and years in this culture, if people had chemical dependency, no one paid attention to their underlying depression. No one paid attention to their mental health. So my brother got kicked out of probably 10 different treatment programs. And his depression came much before his use of alcohol and drugs, much before. Oh, so what is it like if you're depressed and you're using a little bit or maybe a lot and you keep getting kicked out of treatment program after treatment program after treatment program? What is it like for you? What do you have left? So I've been able to work with people to figure out how to create environments which are not so hard-ass. Not so, use once and you're out of here, baby. Which is the way treatment used to be here in Minnesota, too. In Minnesota. A lot of tragedies here in Minnesota. 12-step model became so embedded in Minnesota culture that there was no room for depression. No room for depression. For a depressive slip, that is. So I've had a chance to do that. I feel very lucky. I never knew I was going to have that chance. It just kind of happened. So Katagiri Roshi, I don't know how well he knew Basho. He never talked to me about Basho's poetry. I used to bring it out sometime. But he never said, he never acted like he but in his book that we've been studying, he uses the term pop a few times, just like Basho. Just like Basho. The pop. So here's Katagiri Roshi. This Katagiri Roshi. The first point, Katagiri Roshi says, is that we have to practice. And then, right in the process of practice, the huge universe moves and a magnanimous world comes up. Pop! Is it any different? Is one papa different than another one? Is one opening different than another one? Is one settling into the stillness that your very nature any different than anything else? The first point is that we have to practice. And then right in the process of practice, the huge universe moves and a magnanimous world comes up. A generous world. A generous world. There's generosity. We feel the generosity of other people. When we're open and we're not trying to fight our battles in the realms or protect our territory in the realms, we feel human generosity. It looks like there's not much generosity left if we turn on the television set or think about Iraq or think about our extended family. I don't know about your extended family. I'll just talk about mine. It seems like we've forgotten about magnanimity. But here it is. Out of the practice, you feel it. Out of the practice, you get it. You give it. And you don't know if you're giving or getting. It's just there. So when I began doing this work of trying to develop, figure out how to have alternatives for people to my brother, like my brother. My brother also was in the hospital. They forced him to go to the hospital. They forced him to the hospital and put him in a locked ward. If you're depressed and you get locked up, what do you think it does to your depression? Somebody locks you up for a day or a week, and the doctors come poke at you, does that help your depression? And so my brother, when he killed himself in a locked ward. He shredded a sheet on his bed and was able to make a noose out to kill himself. People do this. People do this. So then, also for 12 years, I've been working on trying to create alternatives to hospitals for people who are thinking about maybe killing themselves, who are really depressed, really having a hard time. And now, finally, we have some here. In Hennepin County, in Minneapolis, and in Anoka County, there was a little tiny one in Ramsey County. So that someone's depressed, doesn't have, can go to a home-like environment, can stay there for a while, get support. So you never know how you're going to personalize. You don't know. I didn't know. My brother's been dead for years and years, and it's just happened. But if you continue to practice just being with what is, and consider the possibility that through your meditation you can open, and then with that opening you have a lot of energy and a lot of magnanimity. And it's not your energy, it's not your magnanimity, it's the universe's. The human species may not make it, but that doesn't mean the universe is any less magnanimous, any less energetic, proliferating one species after another. Species come and go. Species come and go. We think we're going to... we don't seem to be doing any better than any of the other species, do we? Well, we're probably not doing any worse either. So Katagiri Roshi says, and another pop comment is, he says, all at once, the present swallows up the past and wipes it out. Pop! All at once, the present swallows up the past and wipes it out. Pop! At the pivot of nothingness, the next moment unfolds and a new world appears. At the pivot of nothingness, a new world is appearing. Not tomorrow. Not yesterday. It's appearing. And it's magnanimous. Doesn't know that big fancy word, magnanimous. It just is. It just is. And in that world, things are deteriorating and dying and getting born and deteriorating and dying, getting born, living for a while, sometimes experiencing one pointedness and big opening, sometimes getting constricted. So here's a little vignette from I think I'm getting literate or something, because last time I did Shakespeare, now today I'm going to do Tolstoy. Wow. Tolstoy. Master and man. This is Tolstoy. This is Tolstoy's... I could talk... Tolstoy is great, you guys. He's great. He's wonderful. But I won't get into that. Okay? I digress. Anyway, this is a story this fellow named Vasily leaves his servant in the snow to die. And then, after leaving him, he rushes back with a change of heart. And he covers himself over Vasily, who's freezing. And he brings Vasily back to life with the warmth of his own body, the warmth of his own heart. He brings him back to life. But Vasily dies as he's doing that. So here's the vignette. Yes, he awoke, but awoke a very different man to what he had been when he fell asleep. He tried to rise and could not. He tried to move his hand and could not. He tried to move his leg and could not. Then he tried to turn his head, but that also he could not do. Nikita was lying beneath him. And that Nikita was growing warm and was coming back to life. It seemed to him that he was Nikita, and Nikita he, and that his life was no longer within himself, but within Nikita. He strained his ears till he caught the sound of breathing. Yes, the faint, deep breathing of Nikita. "Nikita is alive!" he cried to himself in triumph. "And therefore, so also am I." Tolstoy. "Therefore, so also am I." All at once, the present swallows up the past and wipes it out. Pop! At the pivot of nothingness, the next moment unfolds and a new world appears. Katagiri Roshi said, "Instead of the small, familiar self, set yourself out in array in Buddha's world. You are forming the whole world." So we have choices when things happen to us that are hard, that are difficult, that are hurtful. We have choices. We can constrict into the small, familiar self and become embittered ourselves and become paranoid ourselves and become mistrusting ourselves. We can do that. And often we do that. Or we can use it as an opportunity to set ourselves out in array in Buddha's world. In array. A huge array. And I had support in those days. Or I would have become a withered up prune myself from beating myself up. Because my family had lots of other tragedies too. I won't get into them. One is enough, don't you think, for this morning? Wait till next week for the next one. So I could have shriveled up like a prune. I could have turned into a, and I'm sorry to say this, but a Dick Cheney. When he smiles, you see how he smiles? That man has suffered a lot. And he's afraid. The world has not done him well. He has to protect himself. I'm sure he feels lonely inside, but he knows that the world is not a safe place. And the world's not a safe place. It's not. But if you set yourself out in array, whether it's safe or not safe, the array is happening. The trees are blooming. The caterpillars are eating the leaves. It's an array. It's the whole thing. So you're just with it. And that's the big you. That's not the tiny you that shrivels up so that he can't even laugh anymore. He can't even appreciate anymore. And I don't want to be. Maybe Dick Cheney can. I don't know. I don't want to pick on him. I just, whenever I see him, he's just so tight. So I'll end with one more poem by Basho. The whitebait, they open black eyes to the net of the law. The whitebait, they open black eyes to the net of the law. Well, the whitebait is a tiny little fish that they have off the coast of Japan. Tiny. Silver fish with a big black eye. A big black eye. And they swim in large schools, huge schools. saw Basho. Basho is just showing something here. He's showing something. The black eye that just sees, that doesn't discriminate, even in the middle of the night, it just sees. It's just there. And these little tiny fish, the Japanese use nets that are very fine, so that there are just tiny holes in them to try to catch the white bait. And if the white bait stays very still, the white bait even goes through the tiny mesh. The white baits are good at staying very still. But even though they stay very still, they get caught all the time. Huge hauls all the time. Sooner or later, they get caught. But they just have that black eye. Just the eye of, you could say, non-discrimination. But that's also a big world. Anyway, that's Basho's expression. The white bait, the open there. Black eyes to the net of the law. The net of karma. Karma. Because of cause and effect, cause and effect, cause and effect, we're in this situation. It's not just us. It's not just our parents. It's not just our grandparents. It's not just our genes. It's all that stuff. From the white bait, just is with it. Just is with it. And that net of the law is also the net of what? The net of independence. And the white bait stays still. So that when the white bait dies, it still is just with it. Just with it. Because there's still a huge school of fish there. It's the net, it's Indra's net. Each of those little white bait is the jewel that reflects all the others. So it dies, but it doesn't die. Nikita is alive, and there so far. I am. I'm alive. Because Nikita is alive. Whether I'm dead or not. Whether I'm gone or not. I'm never gone. How can you be gone? You think you can be gone? Everything is gone. Completely gone. Because it's new. It's brand new. Always. Always. I guarantee. But don't believe me. Don't believe me. That you'll never see it then, you'll never experience it then. Practice, big opening, personalization from your heart, from your heart. Anybody have any questions? Comments? Yeah.
Reminds me so much of 2 years ago when I was another Basho poem heading text around the mountain and then the little violet.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And it really provided hope from temptation to despair and fear.
Speak about hope and faith. Hope and faith. Hope and faith. My goodness. Well, because we're human beings and we live in the time process, we need to have hope. We need to have hope. And when you listen to me, hopefully, hopefully, you have a sense of how you too you too can, through your meditation practice, discover this brand new world. You have to have hope that you can do that. We all have to have hope that we can do that, or we just throw in the towel. So we need hope. But the hope that comes out of just belief, just out of dead faith, is not a very nurturing or nourishing hope. And so much hope comes out of just belief, just our heads. And that's okay, but that kind of hope always lets you down sooner or later, because it doesn't involve your heart. And the hope that involves your heart only really happens when your mind is somewhat still. Your mind doesn't have to be totally still. It just has to be still enough so that you are here with your beating of your heart. Then that hope is an inspiration. It inspires you. It's not just a dead hope based on what your therapist told you not to put down your therapist. Based on what your mom told you not to put down your mom. Based on what you told yourself not to put yourself down. The real hope comes when you're able to just let go of some of this noise enough so that you can feel your heart beating right now and feel what its aspiration is. Your heart always has an aspiration. And as soon as your head just cools down enough to open up to that warm heart. It's interesting that your head has to cool down to open up to the warm heart. Maybe that's a poor metaphor, but it can't help it. Then you have an aspiration which goes on regardless of what happens to you, whether you're sick or depressed or have schizophrenia or in a locked ward or in an open ward or wherever you are. What do you think of this open ward we're in, you guys? So, did I answer the question? Okay. Anybody else? Yeah.
I've been thinking about those two ideas, the juxtaposition of them. And although they're similar, there's a big gap between hope and faith. And I think part of that is a degree of certainty, in that if you have to hope for something, you're uncertain as to whether or not you'll get it or it'll happen or something like that. But there's some degree of faith that comes with certainty, or some degree of certainty that comes with faith, that you almost don't have to hope for something if you have faith that it'll occur or transpire or something. That's what she said.
Okay, thank you. Anything else?